and welcome to episode 158 of the Final Siren podcast. I'm your host, Peter Williams, and I'm back with Michael Alvaro to chat all things Pathway football. Michael, how's things?
Very good, Pete. Happy to be back on the podcast. It's championship season, so plenty to talk about and lots of exciting action that's gone on over the last fortnight.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, it's been a little while since we reconvened. It's been a busy time between, obviously, the boys and girls footy representative, state league, etc. So, looking forward to getting stuck into it. We've got plenty to talk about today. As we said, the championships are underway. We'll sort of start off with some of the older crop. Michael, we were over in Adelaide for the under-18s doubleheader on Sunday. Give us a bit of an idea of, I guess, how it went down and, what you sort of took from it.
Yeah, well, obviously, the championships for the under-18s got underway a week prior to that with the Allies defeating South Australia by 16 points. So a really good showing by the Allies. And they backed that up again with a big 88-point victory over WA. So they're looking every bit the title contender. We might touch on that a little bit later. But, on the Allies, they were super impressive again. They move in waves. They are very impressive with their midfield depth. They've got some top-end talent. And I guess after a pretty tight first quarter, they absolutely ran away from Western Australia. The game before that, of course, on Sunday was South Australia against Vic Metro. Metro's first game for the carnival, and they took out a 68-point win. So two lopsided results. Doesn't really bode well for SA and WA, but Metro looking strong, I guess, as usual, and the Allies could be the surprise packet of the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as we know, Country's the only team yet to play. So a couple of games already down from SA and Allies with very different results. Obviously, some of the themes to touch on. If we talk about the Allies, you've got a Tasmanian duo. I know you did an article on them yesterday. Obviously, Colby McKercher, Riley Sanders. Sanders is at Sandringham, but originally Tasmanian from the Devils. So give us a bit of rundown into how they went and, you know, the perhaps conundrum for them and clubs.
Yeah, I mean, that was superb. What, 79 disposals between them, McKercher with 40, Sanders with 39. So they're approaching, you know, record-breaking feats in terms of championship games, and they wax well together. It's unbelievable the amount of times they sort of 1-2 handballed or just managed to find each other between the arcs as they, again, move the ball in waves down the ground. The way that they connect in those attacking phases is just so good to watch. So, yeah, the top two ball winners by far, the next best on the day was Caden Cleary with 28. So, yeah, a gap of over 10 to the next biggest ball winner. And they're really the best two pure midfielders of this draft crop. And the conundrum that you allude to is, you know, obviously them both being Tasmanian, whether clubs are wary of the fact that a Tasmanian team's coming into the AFL by 2027. So, you know, whether they're up for poaching when that team comes around is a little debate that clubs may be having internally. Obviously, they'll do their due diligence as to whether that's a real risk and, whether it's worth taking those two, because obviously there are some bottom ages and a pretty deep bottom age midfield crop to keep an eye on as well.
Yeah, and speaking of that bottom age midfield crop, we obviously saw it with Vic Metro. Now, we know in the past, generally for bottom ages, unless you're in the top echelon, I guess, of players for the future, you often get played in pockets or flanks or things like that, rotated game time. Like, you're effectively just getting some experience while the top ages really take those main roles. But this year, we've seen quite a bit of an uptake in the bottom ages, particularly for Metro. They've got their sort of starting brigade in many regards is a trio of bottom ages. So tell us about them and I guess why they're getting the gig over some of the perhaps top ages.
Yeah, well, the guys you speak of from a Vic Metro sense, obviously, is Levi Ashcroft, Jagger Smith and Josh Smilly. So they were the top three ball winners for Metro over the weekend, all playing essentially full-time midfield. So Ashcroft had 32, 26 uncontested possessions among them. So just absolutely racked it up, dominated play between the arcs and you know, linking play in transition. Jagger Smith, just super classy. He's a sort of player who you think can really play anywhere. He's really light, sort of moves a bit like a whippet, but yeah, again, really clean and classy. And then Josh Smillie is the powerhouse, 194 centimeters. I think he plays a little bit like Patrick Cripps, where he's just so just clean. He's got a great footy IQ, uses the ball pretty well. So they were all, yeah, clearly Metro's best players, really, particularly through the middle of the ground. Obviously, guys like Nick Watson and Jordan Croft were fantastic forward of the ball, but they got that supply from those three. And I think it's a really good debate to have about whether those bottom ages should be playing midfield. Obviously, there are guys who, you know, are in the top age or overage category who are really gearing their life around football and being drafted, and perhaps they deserve a go through midfield and to gain the most exposure that they can. But I think it's pretty refreshing that if the talent's there, you play the best players in the best position to win. And that's essentially what Metro did. And to be honest, there's probably a couple more bottom ages who could be in this team. Guys like Tom Gross, who we might touch on later, even Murphy Reid, they could also play midfield in this side. And it's pretty exciting for what's to come. But I think, yeah, just their class overall was astonishing to watch. And even in the opposition, Sid Draper has been South Australia's best ball winner for the first two games of their carnival. He had 27 touches on the weekend and was a little bit of a one-man team at times through the middle. Obviously, you had guys like Lucas Slade and Kane McAuliffe help him out as top ages. But, yeah, he was the best of the lot for me.
Yeah, and obviously the themes of the, I guess, what we've discussed here with the bottom ages being a really strong crop for next year. You've got a couple of top-end midfielders. You know, we've got McKercher, we've got Reid, who we haven't spoken about yet. But clubs are going to put a premium on those top-end midfielders. But the fact that there is that depth there, it gives them a bit of an option for next year, potentially with trades that, if they are higher up and they think they're going to not quite get the ones they want, they could trade down, trade into next year and potentially get a couple of really good ones.
Yeah, I think that a lot of rebuilding sides tend to focus on that midfield crop first. So if that's the case, I really don't think that there's the depth of midfielders and obviously the risk associated with a guy like Sanders or McKercher with that Tasmanian link. You could pretty much just bank on next year with the way it's looking. And see if you can get a few of those guys for next year, like Smith and Smillie. Obviously, Levi Ashcroft is tied to Brisbane, so he's not as gettable. But Sid Draper as well. You know, there's guys, so much depth in the Victorian crop that I've touched on in an article as well. So they might be worth a look, and it might change a few draft strategies around the nation with regards to where clubs look and how patient they are with building up that young midfield crop.
And there are a couple of marquee matchups on the weekend, particularly in the Allies and WA battle. Michael, we saw Jed Walter and Dan Curtin go head-to-head, which is quite rare in these kind of championships for a couple of top 10 picks to really go at it. How did you find that matchup, and who do you think took the points?
It's pretty even. I think obviously on face value, maybe on paper, you tend to give it to Walter. He had 10 touches, 8 marks, and kicked 3 goals too. But really most of his damage was done in the second half, where the Allies were just running rampant really and doing as they please. But I thought that Dan Curtin was really impressive. 18 disposals, 8 marks, a lot of one percenters as well. It just chimed in with spoils. I think because they're essentially exactly the same size in terms of height and weight, he really was able to equalise one-on-one contests and split them, make sure he at least brought the ball to ground. And he played with a really positive mindset too. So he backed himself in positions to maybe not always engage, but look for the intercept first. And then when that's not available, to engage Walter and try to get a spoil in. So it's hard when there's so much supply, which there was in the second half, but I thought he held up really well. And to be honest, you'd probably be quite tempted to give him the points just for the context of the game and what he was able to do, not only defensively, but then also with ball in hand. He's always super composed. He's got a great left foot and makes good decisions. So a great even battle. And yeah, recruiters got their wish. That's what we were after, or they were after. And yeah, it really lived up to the hype.
Yeah, absolutely. And from one key position matchup to another, obviously we had the ruck battle between Ethan Reed, a Gold Coast Suns Academy member, and Mitch Edwards out at Peel Thunder. They got to clash in the Allies WA battle again. So how did you find that and who took the points from that one?
Yeah, I think this one's a little easier to sort of split or identify who took the points because they both took points in different areas. So I'd say that Mitch Edwards definitely won the ruck battle. He had 30 hitouts, which is probably the thing you look at most or more, you know, most significantly in a pure number sense. So he's probably the better ruckman, definitely in his craft and one-on-one in his physicality, at least against Reed. But Reed probably won the battle around the ground. So he had 11 marks, 21 disposals. His ability to cover the ground on the spread, both back and even when he's resting forward, is phenomenal. He takes the ball at the highest point, really clean clunker. And but on the flip side, that ruck craft is probably something he can work on. Edwards was still pretty good around the ground, took 4 marks for himself, mostly either intercepting WA's kick-ins or being the target for, intercepting the Allies' kick-ins or being the target for WA's. So a little bit of a different role, but he certainly stood up. It was a tough game really for the Black Ducks to do much, and he was probably one of their better players. So watch for them two to be really the best two rucks, the two guys who are battling it out for that number one ruck, I guess, position in the draft. I'd say that Edwards is the better ruck, but again, Ethan Reed probably beats him around the ground and perhaps has that scope for versatility where he could be a centre half back or a centre half forward in the future.
So taking all that into account and obviously the results from the weekend, what do you sort of think it means for the greater draft picture and perhaps which players have raised their stocks, especially with power rankings coming towards the end of the month?
Yeah, I think that there's probably not as many players for me who have necessarily raised their stocks, but maybe guys who are just really strengthening or confirming their position in the draft order. So you look at McKercher and Walter, they're, you know, they've really stamped themselves as top 5 players. So they'll probably sit within that 2-5 bracket for the rest of the year, just because, they've proven themselves at talent league level and wherever else they've played. And now at championship level, I was about to say Champions League, that's on the mind as well. But Dan Curtin as well, he's a top 10 talent, definitely one of the better key position guys out there. You look at Riley Sanders, who's, you know, right in that top 10 now. He's probably behind McKercher as the second best pure midfielder in the draft. And then Connor O'Sullivan deserves a mention as well. He was super in the first half when there was a little bit of pressure on the Allies' defence. He's really found a home down back. He had 21 disposals and 10 marks, just reads the play so well. He's great aerially, gets from contest to contest. He's super mobile for his size as well. Guy who's almost 200 centimetres, really keeps up with transitional play. You could see him running alongside Riley Sanders, looking for handball receives when they were moving the ball forward. So, he's another one who's probably locking into that top 15. I had him right on number 15 in the May power rankings. He might slide up a couple picks. So a little watch on him. I think Jordan Croft is another who has that sort of potential. He was definitely in the top 15 for May, and he'll likely stay there for me in the next edition. Shout out as well to Jack Callanan and Will Graham from the Allies. Callanan kicked 3 goals, I think all in the second quarter, really outpointed the opposition, just really smart and opportunistic. And Will Graham's got some traits. He's probably the forgotten man amongst that Gold Coast Academy Hall, but clubs will definitely have a look at him. He's got deceptive speed, really good size and clean skills, playing in defence for the Allies, but we know that he can play in midfield too. So there are a few who I really have liked in the first couple of weeks of the championships.
Yeah, and we know that it's ongoing. There's plenty still to come. So states are still battling it out for the championship. We know that, you know, South Australia now isn't looking too flash, and WA as well. So if we look ahead to the other 3 teams, you've got the Allies and you've got the 2 Victorian teams yet to see Vic Country, but both Vic Metro and the Allies had massive wins on the weekend. Allies are 2 zip up. Do you think the Allies in particular, who have through their own words, last year, Mark Browning used these exact words, was many teams consider them to be the easy beats. Clearly not the case this year. Do you think they can go all the way?
Absolutely. I think really on what we've seen, they're the best team in it. Vic Metro coming off their first game, they'll likely improve. And it'll be a great game between them and the Allies, I think. I think even Vic Country, for me, even though we haven't seen them yet, are probably the second best team. I think they'll be a little bit better than Metro, but obviously that remains to be seen. They've got Harley Reid in the team, so why not? But yeah, the Allies, just their togetherness for a team that is comprised of players from, you know, every expanse of the country really is remarkable. They've come together. They play together really well. Their style of play is attractive and really effective. So they were tested against WA for at least a quarter and they really held up to the task. Like they led at quarter time somehow because the ball was really played in their defensive half for most of that first quarter. And then for the rest of the game, they dominated the way that they move the ball. They've got a super deep midfield, McKercher, Sanders, Cleary, Rogers, even Indy Kirk, he's had plenty of the ball. You've got Sam Marshall on the outside. So there's just a real depth to them, a balance with their key position players. You've got Walter at one end, O'Sullivan at the other, even Charlie McCormack's popping up with four goals. So they're just a super balanced team, probably the most balanced out of any team in the championships. And again, their style of play is really great to watch. So I'd probably back them at this stage to take out the title, but there's a lot to go.
Yeah, there is plenty to go. Of course, it rolls on this Sunday at Icon Park. Vic Country enters the fray to take on South Australia. Of course, at the oddly specific time of 10:35, we've sort of found that's been a case across the board, but we'll move from the 18s to the under 16s, which kicked off on Saturday with an all-Victorian clash. Obviously, Vic Country took out the Chocolates in a three-point thriller at Trevor Barker Oval. Michael, who were the standouts for you in that clash?
Yeah, just on that as well, Country came back from a fair way back. They had a super last quarter, really piled on the goals. And, you know, they were trailing pretty much for the whole game, really turned it on in that last quarter. So a super effort from them to take out the win, a three-point win off the boot of Harry Morfitt, Geelong Falcons midfielder who had 13 touches on the day. The standout, though, was Willem Dersma, who's going to be a name familiar to a lot of people. Obviously, the fourth in line in the Dersma clan, the brother of Zane, Yazzie and Xavier. So he's the W in the Dersma alphabet and a fantastic player. He's got really a lot of AFL traits, a lot like his brother Zane, where he's super athletic, he's tall, 189 centimetres and really versatile. They played him down back in this game. He was the top ball winner with 27 touches, 10 marks, 9 rebound 50. So great numbers and just dominated really. He's a really composed kind of player, just seems a natural footballer. So he's going to be a great watch. They had, I think, Josh Lindsay, another Geelong Falcons player. He had 20 touches through midfield. He was pretty good. Giuseppe Postorino, a good Italian name. He's a really lively small forward also out of the Geelong Falcons. So a few to watch there. Jack Dalton was one of the best for Vic Metro, 26 touches, 8 inside 50s through midfield. They've got a few familiar names as well. I think Tom McGuan is the son of Mick. He had 14 touches, a lively midfielder forward. So there's a few names there. We'll get into them more as the championships go on. And as we get that all Australian team, of course, and a few of them will go on to play Talent League football. So there's definitely some names to watch and a really good game to kick off those development championships out at Trevor Barker Beach Oval.
Yeah, we've got the under 16s, of course, continuing this weekend. You've got GWS and Sydney Academy's going battle on Saturday. And then we look to Pool A, which is on the 25th of June. You've got WA up against SA out at Mineral Resources Park. Of course, we've been there when we were over in the West. And then, of course, we've got the big week in Queensland, which will have plenty of under 16s action along with some under 18s games as well. But plenty to see and do there. Before we finish off, we're going to sort of just get your thoughts on the rest of the weekend and anything else that's worth bringing up, particularly from the results on the weekend just gone. What did you sort of pick up?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's only really one more game to talk about in a draft sense. That was in the Talent League, where we saw a few Vic Metro squad members run about. Sandringham Dragons, of course, taking on the Oakley Chargers on Monday, the King's birthday long weekend, to round that one out. And it was Sandy who got up again for the second time against their local rival. That's their first win after the community break. Oakley still yet to win in that time. They're still yet to beat a full-time region this season as well. So struggling a little bit. But in terms of personnel, we had Murphy Reid, probably the standout on the day. He had 26 touches, 8 tackles and a goal. Then on the opposition side for Oakley, Tom Gross, 23 touches, 7 inside 50s and a goal. He was super as well. Both are midfielders. Both could slot into the Metro team, but obviously with the wealth of bottom ages, you probably want to give those older boys a run. Will Elliott was another. He kicked 1-2, but probably looked a bit better than what that suggests. Obviously a big tall forward in the overage category. Taj Hodden, the brother of Ollie, kicked 2-2, pretty lively, playing mostly as a half forward. And really, I think in terms of themes of the game, it was really Sandringham's talls who stood up and won it for them. Guys like Archer May, Luke Lloyd, Levi Young, they really smashed it up forward. They were fantastic on the lead, and it was pretty hard for guys like Luke Teal, Taj McCarthy to keep up with them aerially because there were just so many of them. So a pretty handy game to have, I guess, in the recess or the latest recess for the Talent League. They're not going to play this weekend either. So, yeah, it was good to have at least some action.
Yeah, and that's pretty much all we have time for on the Final Siren podcast for another week. I've been your host, Peter Williams. Michael, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, pleasure as always. Keen to get some more championships action under the belt on Sunday.
Absolutely. And to see all that, read all that, be sure to stay tuned to Rookie Me Central for all your latest news and analysis. And follow us at Rookie Me Central on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. You can, of course, subscribe to us on all your favorite streaming services to never miss an episode. That's all for now. We hope you tune in next week.